You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and that's what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. My name is David, and I am joined today by the hosts of the Sterling Eyes Wrestling Podcast Extravaganza, Sterling Mantooth and Dead Eyes. The Sterling Eyes Wrestling Podcast Extravaganza is a UK-based podcast that reviews and critiques old-school wrestling pay-per-views from the 1980s and 90s, as well as other special content from time to time. Their show was a look back at some of the all-time greats who have made the business what it is today, and it rips into some of the absolute jobbers who have somehow managed to build a successful career. If you listen to their show, prepare yourself for foul language, lots of laughs, tons of wrestling trivia and history, backstage stories, insights, and a great trip down memory lane. Sterling Mantooth and Dead Eyes, welcome to OWW Radio.
Hey,
hi, Dave. How's it going?
It's going great. I wanted to thank you for joining me on the show. I had a great time being on your show, the Sterling Eyes Wrestling Podcast Extravaganza. Dead Eyes, tell us a little bit about yourself and the show that you guys produce.
We set up in November. And basically, it was Stalin's idea, really. He sort of contacted me and said, do you want to do a podcast about wrestling? And I hadn't watched wrestling since being a child. So I sort of was a bit hesitant and then went along with it. And before we know it, we're halfway through our second series. So, yeah, it's come on leaps and bounds.
That's excellent. And Sterling, how did you get into wrestling?
I was watching as a child. Like I said, I think I remember going to, there was an event in Plymouth, as I pointed out before, that it wasn't legitimate, so that it was supposed to be Legion of Doom and other wrestlers like that, but there wasn't, it was all fake wrestlers. But around that time, I was watching a lot of wrestling on TV, and yeah, I've sort of lost interest during the teenage years and through adult life, but since doing this podcast, it's all I can talk about, really.
I found that for myself also, it was kind of cyclical. There were periods of time where I was really, really into it, and then, you know, life happens, and sometimes the product's just not as good, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from doing these podcasts, because we go right back in time to the golden era of WWF and, you know, around the 80s and 90s. And it's really weird because we've just done WrestleMania 30 as a special review. And to leap forward to what we've got now from what we've been doing, it's really strange.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dead Eyes, do you guys focus just on the WWF / WWE product?
No, because we did WWF as our first series, and we moved on, Stalin sort of moved us on to WCW. So we've been sort of halfway through that series right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure we're going to come back to WWF or WWE again.
We did sort of 10 episodes on WWF and then moved on to WCW, but in between we've done a few other bits and bobs. We did a few shows focusing on some British wrestling promotions, just like mini episodes and some bits and bobs like that. So we're kind of dipping our toes into various different promotions, and who knows what season 3 is going to hold for us at the moment.
Well, if someone went and listened to one of your podcasts, for example, how long is a typical show? How in-depth do you get when you look at, say, WrestleMania 1 or 2, that type of show?
quite interesting, really, how it worked out, because we when we first started, Stalin was doing the rundown, so he'd break down everything, and we I think the first shows were 2 to 3 hours, so it was quite a long show, and because I was talking about it as well, and we got to Rumble 1988, I think it was, which was sort of halfway through the series, and realised I was doing a rundown, Stalin was doing a rundown, and it was taking like up to the 3 hours just of us doing these rundowns. So we've we changed it from that point on to Stalin doing the rundown, and then I'll just talk random rubbish and cut it down, I suppose, between an hour and 2 hours, usually around the 2 hour mark.
Yeah, the recent shows have been around the two-hour mark. We did, it did get to the point where the shows were so long we were struggling to upload them. But now we've managed to kind of refine it a bit, so it's all a bit more concise. So if you listen back to our kind of earlier episodes, they are quite long. Obviously, they're incredibly funny and amazing, but they are quite long. But now, I mean, with regards to how much detail we go into, it's very informal, but it's quite irreverent, quite foul-mouthed. We rip into what's funny. We rave about the things that are good. We laugh a lot, and we chuck in quite a bit of wrestling trivia and history as well while we're at it. So we kind of run down the matches, give our thoughts on those matches, talk about the segments in between and promo packages and that kind of thing, and just talk about the wrestlers who are, you know, some pretty colorful characters from the past.
I know that when I started these types of radio shows, I wasn't quite sure how much preparation I would have to do before the show went on the air, and I found out, boy, you got to do quite a bit, and especially for the types of shows you're doing where you're reviewing a specific pay-per-view, so you got to go back and watch it, right? You got to, you know, get your notes together. It's a real effort for you guys to put these together.
Yeah, I mean, to watch the show, record it, edit it, listen to it again to make sure it's okay, and upload it is about 10 hours each.
Yeah.
That's without the YouTube videos. And
yeah, and we make YouTube, yeah. Well, Dead Eyes makes our YouTube videos as well, and they take hours. But I also have been doing, because we're looking at WCW 10 years in time at the moment in this series, so I'm trying to cover as much of the history. So we'll do one show from each year, but at the beginning of the show I'll run down what's happened in between. And bearing in mind that we're at the mid-90s in WCW, there's a lot happening between each show, especially when you're covering a year and the chaos and the backstage politics and who's in charge and who's not in charge anymore. So it's quite a bit of research that goes into that as well.
Well, you two seem to have great chemistry together. I think that even if you're friends with someone, is not always the case when you do a radio program or a TV program. How much do the two of you have to work on, you know, being in sync with putting together a good program?
I'll let you cover that, Dead Eyes, I think.
Yeah, thanks. It's really strange, because when we started, I didn't know what to expect. I'd never even listened to a podcast before, so it was a really big leap for me. And to start with, I think there was a load of times we were tripping over each other's words and interrupting each other at the wrong time and things like that. But as the show's progressed, we've definitely moved forward in that way. And a lot of people feedback that we've got, you know, I've got a really good chemistry. I mean, we are obviously, you know, really good friends anyway. I knew you had to sneak that in. You know, we're really good friends anyway. But like you said, it doesn't always translate when you're doing something like this. For some reason, it just works. Like, we do just, you know, bounce off each other. And we have learned a lot from, you know, every episode that we've done. And we always sort of discuss what went well and what didn't, and try and adapt and improve.
Yeah, we're always working on improving the show. But with the chemistry, like, I think we've known each other for a long time, and we've worked together on other creative projects in the past. So I think that's probably... And also, we don't take each other or ourselves too seriously, so I think that helps.
Yeah, I think that shows that I've been fortunate to be a part of that have gone well, it's because usually myself and the co-host do each other. There's got to be a friendship there, and you do get better as you go along. I've done some interviews before that they were going down the wrong path, and we were able to kind of start, you know, get back on track and put together a good show. And sometimes that just takes experience, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's definitely a learning curve, though, isn't it, Dead Eyes? It's like, something. I think if I went back and listened to our first show now, I'd probably be horrified. But you know, they're getting better. They get better all the time, and hopefully we'll carry on going down that path and improving the way the shows flow and that sort of thing.
Well, as you guys are going back here looking at these old pay-per-views, sometimes our memory of these shows is different than what they actually were. Have you gone back and looked at a few and said, boy, you know, that show was either a lot better than I thought, or, oh, goodness, that show was nowhere near as good?
Absolutely, yeah. That happens all the time. The best thing is when a show that you love and remember, you watch it, and it's still absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. Royal Rumble 92 was one of my favorite pay-per-views as a kid. Mm-hmm. and we reviewed that, and it's just as good now to watch. It's so good. But yeah, there's a lot of the old WrestleManias, you know, they were built around one or two matches, and when you're sitting there watching 3 or 4 hours of them, and all you remember is that classic main event, and you've got to sit through Hercules jobbing out to the Warrior and things like that. You know, it does kind of cloud your judgment on them.
Oh, no question. Well, I was fortunate enough as a kid to go to WrestleManias 4 and 5. They're always very special to me, but I mean, I've gone back and watched them many times. WrestleMania 4 is terrible. There's a match or two. Like you said, I mean, you know, Macho Man's moment is great, and there are moments in that show, but the tournament's a mess. Even, you know, you go back to WrestleMania 2, I thought was a mess with the three different cities, and most of the matches are just awful. You know, is that fair criticism?
WrestleMania 1 and 2, I barely classify as WrestleManias. They're both just absolute... They're just horrific. WrestleMania 4, I've got a bit of a soft spot for because it was the first WrestleMania that I... Probably the first WrestleMania I ever saw. Certainly the first one I had on video. I had it on VHS. It was a double VHS. And like I just watched it until I wore the tape out. But yeah, no, when you go back and watch it, it is horrific.
I mean, did you guys ever, you know, we just talked about WrestleMania 30, or we just saw WrestleMania 30. Did you ever think it would get this big?
It's crazy. It was such a massive, massive event. I guess because when I first got into wrestling in a big way, it was already pretty big. So I guess it's kind of a logical evolution, but at the same time, it could easily have not made it.
How about you, Deadeyes?
Right. Yeah, I mean, WrestleMania 30 for me was the first modern-day wrestling event that I've watched. I can't even remember the last one I watched. I was watching back in the Attitude Era the last time I was watching. So, yeah, this was a big thing to me. It's such a spectacle, massive. And I kept on thinking of myself, what would people back then make of what they've got now? Mm-hmm. And because I mean, you look at the intros of the old shows and things like that. I mean, in some of them they were huge. I mean, WrestleMania 3 was it? It was
93,000.
Yeah, it was crazy. But I mean, what they have now is definitely more of a spectacle, and the production values are immense compared to what they were.
See, I would argue that WrestleMania 3 is still the biggest show of all time. Now, you could say WrestleMania 1 because of the importance to Vince and the company and what it pushed forward with him, but I still think WrestleMania 3 holds up almost from the opening bell. I mean, just the quality of the tag teams that are in that show. I mean, you look at the roster at WrestleMania 3, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I've always thought that WrestleMania 3 is really the first WrestleMania. It's where they refined the formula and made the show what it is today. So you watch WrestleMania 3 and you watch WrestleMania 30, and actually there's not much has changed in the formula, the layout, the way it works. Whereas you watch WrestleMania 1 and WrestleMania 2, well, WrestleMania 2 was just a mess. Three venues, closed circuit TV, it was just terrible. WrestleMania 1 was, I guess, a bit more similar to what they're doing today, but obviously it was an experiment, it was the first time, they didn't really know how to run it, there was a lot wrong with that show. WrestleMania 3 was the beginning of WrestleMania as we know it today.
When I was really, really into wrestling as a kid, the story between Hulk Hogan and the Macho Man Randy Savage, the Mega Powers, was big. Does that still hold up today? Because I think the Mega Powers and their 2 years plus storytelling is as special as it ever was.
For me, that's probably the greatest feud of all time, or one of them. It was just so well booked, so well planned out in advance. It was just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think it was definitely the best feud, and especially since our reviews, you know, we've done quite a lot of different events from different time periods, and it was definitely the best feud, and took, you know, like you said, it was like a year in the making or more. So, it's definitely the best feud.
Well, and, you know, a big part of that, of course, was Miss Elizabeth. People today have a different view of the divas or of the knockouts or of women in this business. But, I mean, I went to a Saturday night's main event in Hershey, Pennsylvania. in February of 1989, where basically the entire program was based on whose corner is she going to stand in. I mean, the matches were almost ancillary that night. They really didn't matter. They were okay, but it was Miss Elizabeth's decision was basically the main point of that program. She was as big a part of the Mega Powers storyline as anything that had to do with anything.
Was that the show that really set it up where she got knocked out and Hogan dragged her or took her back to the backstage?
It was not. In Hershey, because I was fortunate to grow up near Hershey, Pennsylvania, we had the show there where Honky Tonk Man pushes her down, Hogan comes out for the first time and they shake hands, and then we got the show a couple years later where she comes out with Gene Okerlund and she says, no, I'm not going to be in your corner, no, I'm not going to be in Hogan's corner, or whatever. The show you're talking about, the main event, was when the Mega Powers were right against the Twin Towers, right?
That's right, yeah.
And that it wasn't in Indianapolis. I can't remember exactly where that was, but that was great. She took a big bump, didn't she?
Yes, she did. Yeah. That was a classic moment in that feud as well. You know, how many times has that been replayed? Macho attacking Hogan in the locker room, just so amazingly built up. I think actually one of the recent Daniel Bryan feud is potentially another feud, one of the only feuds I can think of that's been built over as long a time,
mm-hmm.
maybe accidentally, but that has worked out to be booked over such a long time as Macho Hogan, and it's paid off. But yeah, the Macho Hogan feud was a masterpiece.
Miss Elizabeth's amazing as well.
Miss Elizabeth,
I just want to chuck that in. Yeah,
yeah, the best woman that's ever been a part of a major wrestling promotion.
I agree, and we will get to WrestleMania 30. I wanted to walk a little bit through the 90s with you guys, because you are doing those podcasts now, and talk a little bit about how pay-per-views changed as we moved into the 90s. Did you feel like they were as good, better? I mean, what is your impression of pay-per-views as they moved into the 90s?
It was really strange for us, because when we started off Series 1, we were bouncing back and forward in time. So we didn't have we weren't going in a strict progression. We're literally going from one event and then back in time, loads of years. With the WCW series that we're doing, it's actually moving in progression of time. So as years go by, and we're working from, I think it was 1989, was it?
Yeah,
like
89. Yeah.
And we're currently at 1994. So yeah, I don't know. What do you think, Stalin, about the?
It's funny because you go from 1989 up to kind of 91, 92, and the shows are kind of the same, but they're getting a little bit more sort of neon and laser inspired. So they're starting to look a little bit sillier, and they really don't hold up. So in some respects, the shows from like the 80s look better today than the shows from the early 90s from a production point of view and a production values and that kind of thing. But as you move into, like, we're currently at 90, we're about to do our 1994 review for WCW, and we're kind of in the middle of, like a really bad period for wrestling, that 94 through to 96, 97, when you had the boom again. So they can be challenging to watch, the mid-90s. Luckily, with WWF, we mainly stuck to the 80s and the very early 90s. We dipped into the future a little bit for our podcast, and we did WrestleMania 12. But it's really interesting to see. I do think the 80s pay-per-views were better than that kind of early to mid-90s period. Not necessarily commenting on the quality of the wrestling, but the way the shows kind of hold up and book together.
Do you know what I found really strange was a lot of the time you'd look at the, like, again, going back to the intros and things like that, they flash up and it'd be all, like you say, neon lights and all the rest of it and look really cheesy. And yet around that time, if you look at what was released around that time, it's like Jurassic Park had come out in the cinema, and you're thinking, well, surely there should be someone there actually making something that looks really good, but they weren't. pure cheese.
We've been on the WCW reviews that we're doing at the moment. Our last show was 93, and at this point in time, WCW had decided, you may well remember this, Dave, WCW had decided that instead of having proper feuds that were built up over time at live shows, they decided to scrap all that and promote all of their main events through mini movies.
Huh.
So they started making short films. The last one we saw was The White Castle of Fear, which was like a 10-15 minute movie featuring Vader and Sting. And Vader was inviting Sting to his White Castle of Fear. So the whole feud was promoted on this fictional 10-minute short film that was just absolute gibberish and nonsense.
I don't remember that. I have to go back and look at some of those moments.
Yeah, you'll have to. A personal favourite of mine, I actually spliced quite a lot of it into the last show we did, was Sting versus Jake the Snake Roberts on his very brief appearance in WCW. And that was promoted as a spin the wheel, make the deal match. Yeah, it's even funnier than it sounds, but basically that was promoted through a video with Jake the Snake sat in a bar, surrounded by midgets and bikers, chanting, spin the wheel, make the deal. And then Sting walks in, says he ain't afraid of no wheel, and shoots lasers out of his eyes.
Oh my god.
I think I put a link out on our Facebook page, so take a look, or just go on YouTube and type in spin the wheel, make the deal, and you can't miss it.
That is right. You know, I think back to that early 90s, and I'm disappointed because the Hulk Hogan-Ric Flair feud never materialized like it should have. Sterling, why do you think that is? I mean, when Ric Flair came to WWF at the time, it seemed like it was setting up perfectly, and it never quite came together.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, actually, because we're actually recording tonight. We're recording Bash at the Beach 94, which is Hulk Hogan's WCW pay-per-view debut, where he comes in and the match is for the world title. It's Hogan versus Flair. So that's where we're at now. But with regards to WWF, it was a shambles. From what I hear, the plan was WrestleMania 8, so Flair would win the 92 Rumble, come in, and that match should have been a dead cert. It just should definitely have happened. It would have drawn massive, massive money. But they put Flair versus Hogan on some house shows, and they didn't draw as well as they'd hoped, and the guys didn't seem to have much chemistry. This is you know, the word from things that I've read. But basically, that's why it didn't happen, and they went in the direction of Flair versus Macho Man and Hogan versus Sid Justice, and WrestleMania 8 kind of became a bit of a main event disaster.
It was
really bad, and I was watching wrestling avidly at that time, and I was just like, why has that happened? But I imagine almost definitely it was just politics between the two guys.
Well, I'll give you a first-person account. I did go to Hershey for a Flair versus Hogan house show, and it was shocking how dead the crowd was. If I'm remembering correctly, Hogan won by count out. And it was, you know, it just goes to show you, no matter how good the wrestlers are, you need the excitement around it. You need the storytelling, right? You need the packaging that Vince in WWE is so good at. And it was just mind-blowing that these two legends could – I don't even think Hershey was sold out that night. It really was a failure. And Dead Eyes, I mean, is that – if you look back, maybe the one feud that you regret the most didn't happen that like it should have?
Yeah.
You're asking the wrong person.
I'm not a fan of Flair.
Okay.
I don't know, really. Actually, again – coming back to the history thing, when I was watching as a child, I've only got fragments, really. I'm nowhere near as knowledgeable as Sterling with all things wrestling. And as we're progressing with the podcast, I'm actually sort of learning during that ride, really. So, it's a bit of a weird question for me.
One of the nice things, actually, about the show is because Dead Eyes hasn't watched a lot of the shows that we're reviewing. I mean, neither of us have for these early WCW shows, but for the WWF ones, it's quite interesting seeing someone with a totally fresh, unbiased perspective that doesn't necessarily have that nostalgia to certain shows. And actually, like, Dead Eyes is like, no, that was just, you know, awful. Why do you love it? And it's like, I realise that sometimes I only love something through nostalgia. And other times, we quite often disagree on the show. But like on the last show we did, which was WrestleMania 30, we both agreed on almost everything. So it's quite interesting how that affects the dynamic on the show as well, actually.
Well, I agree, because I love WrestleMania 1, because I love the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov. I loved them as a kid, and they win the titles, and so I think it's a great show. You're right, it does change. Mel, as you guys go back and watch, what is your impression of Bret Hart as champion? You know, it was not a great time for WWF. You know, he's certainly a world-class worker, but, you know, is his mark in history as it should be?
No, I don't think so, no. I was a big Bret Hart fan, and I still think you can go back and watch most Bret Hart matches, and, well, he just doesn't have bad matches. He was really good. Maybe he wasn't as much of a draw as someone like Hogan or even like Shawn Michaels, but the guy never had a bad match. I think he got overshadowed. I think the Montreal Screwjob will always be his legacy, unfortunately, and, you know, the bitterness that came from that, understandably, but his bitterness has kind of tainted his legacy for me. I think the guy's one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
What about how he got screwed over at WrestleMania 9, too, where, you know, Hogan comes out and kind of saves the day? I don't know if his character ever recovered from that. I hate it. I look back at that. That was... I never felt quite the same way about him again.
See... Why did you never feel the same about Bret Hart about that? I'm only interested because, really, for me, that was just Hogan being a...
No, that's fair. I that's a good point, and I'm glad you threw that back to me. I guess it's because I loved Bret Hart, and he still probably is my favorite... Well, the Hart Foundation is my favorite tag team. I liked him better in the tag team, but anyway... I never then, after that, saw him at the same level as Hogan and Savage and Flair and those guys. But that's just myself. And I know he went on, of course, you know, to win the championship and had big main event matches and everything. But it left a really, really bad taste in my mouth.
I blame Hogan for that. But I think you're right, actually. It's interesting because I hadn't thought about it in that way. Because Bret Hart was on a real hot run up until that point. And he did kind of come across... And maybe that's where his kind of bitterness in his character actually started. Because, yeah, he did basically get screwed by Hogan and Vince that night. So he didn't have the most luck, really, with booking, did he?
Right, right. Well, you guys are going to, you know, get into some great, great pay-per-views, like you said, with the Attitude Era and the Monday Night Wars. And that's a real fun time. Those must be shows you're really looking forward to watching.
I mean, I'm particularly looking forward to it. I mean, at WrestleMania 30, when The Rock and Stone Cold come out, I said to Stan at the time, I think even when we were recording, that, you know, actually, there was a little flutter in my heart. Like, it was like, wow, some of the big stars are back. And I was never really a huge fan back then of The Rock or Stone Cold. It was just seeing them again, though, coming out. So, yeah, looking forward to the Attitude Era when we get round to that.
I wasn't really watching WWF during the Attitude Era. I watched WCW during that period. So Monday Night Wars, I was watching WCW. But I trailed off before it ended and before Vince bought WCW. And I actually stopped watching wrestling at that point. So it must have been like 95. No, must have been like 98. Somewhere around there, and then I didn't really watch wrestling for a long time after that, so my wrestling kind of period ends at towards the end of the Monday Night Wars, but I was definitely WCW at that point, when they were doing, before it went really, really bad, and they started doing loads of crazy booking, and like, it just went awful, but I am looking forward to moving through that, and we're coming up to the start of that in the next few episodes, from a WCW perspective, and yeah, I think the next series is most likely going to be looking at that period in time.
I remember a Monday night at 7:59. I mean, my house had been burning down, and it didn't matter. I was going to be there watching Nitro at 8 o'clock. And that Monday Night War period was really, really important and really brought me back because I'd kind of fallen out a little bit with going to college and everything, and it was fantastic. It's kind of a shame that TNA or Ring of Honor, you know, aren't ever going to really give WWE that level of competition again.
Agreed. I don't think there's going to be another massive set of competition for them, although Jeff Jarrett's got Global Force Wrestling coming out at some point this year. What are your thoughts on that?
I like any promotion out there because it gives more jobs to people in this business. It gives wrestlers an opportunity to wrestle, and referees and ring announcers, and you know, so all of that is great. It gives people jobs, but I don't think for a second it's going to make a dent in World Wrestling Entertainment. Deadeyes, am I wrong about that?
No, I agree completely.
Yeah, no, I agree with that as well. I think they're just too big and too slick.
I think it's a shame. I think a monopoly in any industry is not healthy, and that's what we have with WWE.
Well, and TNA is kind of falling apart a little bit. I mean, I think their product's okay, but boy, you see their house show numbers are just terrible. And, you know, Ring of Honor's a nice promotion, and now Global Force Wrestling. But once WWE put in this performance center, oh boy, you know, because basically what they're doing, right, is that's kind of their new territory approach. I mean, they're no longer going out to these other territories and grabbing up-and-coming talent. They're going to breed their own at this performance center with state-of-the-art everything and, you know, put them on NXT, which is kind of like they're almost a better show than TNA.
Yes, agreed,
But you look at the main roster of WWE now, and it's already made an impact.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a bit conflicted about this in that I feel like wrestling or wrestlers is becoming a little bit sterile, and something like the Performance Center, it's almost like they're just breeding wrestling clones. You know, like they're just making Randy Orton's and giving them a gimmick, and or like Batista's, and that, and like what happened to the old days where it was a bunch of carnies,
yeah,
that had real personalities and real, like, they were, you know, off-the-wall characters, like, off-the-head characters. And, you know, and I think that's missing today. Like, it just feels a bit contrived, a bit sterile, a bit produced, whereas, you know, the guys don't speak for themselves. They're put through the performance center. They're taught how to wrestle, which is good, and the quality of the wrestling is going to improve, and it has improved. But the characters are missing, and that's something that really is apparent when you watch modern wrestling and you go back and watch the old wrestling that we've been reviewing. Like, there's a big difference between WrestleMania 30, our only modern day wrestling review, and the old shows, and the characters are stronger, the guys are speaking, they're extensions of themselves. I don't feel like that's true of modern wrestling.
To add on to that, we talk about characters. Coco Beware's in the WWE Hall of Fame. Now, I know we shouldn't get all wrapped up in who's in and who's not in the Hall of Fame. I understand that. But, I mean, I don't remember him winning more than two matches my whole life. He was on TV every week with a bird, and he danced around. Kofi Kingston won more matches on television in the month of March than I remember Coco Beware winning in, like, 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Yeah, but yeah, and Coco Beware is not even a face that's synonymous with WWF back in that era. he just wasn't that big a star.
That's what I mean, though. But they made this character that was all packaged with Frankie, the, you know, and then he came out with this music, and it made him seem bigger even than what he was. And now you do have, you know, I mean, Cody Rhodes is like a tremendous talent. They have so many tremendous talents. And yet, they kind of become a bit forgettable. I think it's a little bit what you were saying about a little bit generic,
yeah,
or sterile.
Cody Rhodes is a phenomenal in-ring talent.
Unbelievable.
He just needs something, and it looked like it was happening with the team with Goldust, and they were having amazing matches every week, and they've just been dropped. And part of it is that, where's the consistency? They could have built that tag team up. Okay, they didn't want to split them and have them face off at WrestleMania 30 for whatever reason. That's fine. Build it for another year. Have the team carry on, like, performing well. And, you know, Cody Rhodes is someone who is frustrating to watch because he's so good, but he is so bland.
Or, you know, they've given Bad News Barrett, like, what, six gimmicks now in the last year and a half? I mean, you know, they do these great vignettes where he's this, like, back alley brawler, and he's kind of a tough dude, right? And then you're just buying that, and then 2 weeks later, it's like, I got some bad news. And he's just, like, on a little gavel, and it's like, oh, my goodness. That's one criticism I do have of Vince, is that the consistency is not there. Damian Sandow, remember he had a great match against John Cena earlier this year?
Amazing match.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It was great. And then 2 weeks later, he's losing, you know, it's just, they did nothing with it.
No, it looks as though the Wade Barrett's on his way to a little push now, but whether that'll last, they might have done the right thing taking him off TV for a while, bringing him on, not having him in any matches, and then give him a big push. Maybe that's going to help, but it is basically an opening segment comedy gimmick.
Yeah.
So a guy who's actually like a pretty good worker.
Oh yeah, I think he's very, very good, and
yeah.
He got thrown in to the Andre the Giant Battle Royal right at WrestleMania 30. Let's turn our attention to the big show that was just down in New Orleans, and it sounds like we all kind of enjoyed the show. What do you think, Deadeye?
Yeah, surprisingly, I really did. I wasn't expecting to. I'm really not a fan of Brian either, and being as the whole show was pretty much centered around that in one shape or form, I just really wasn't looking forward to it. But saying that, apart from the Divas match, and there was another one as well which I can't remember, but
Cena
apart from
Wyatt.
Those, yeah, that's right, Cena. Apart from those ones, I actually really, really enjoyed the event.
Yeah, I thought it exceeded my expectations hugely. I wasn't looking forward to it in the weeks running up because I thought a lot of the feuds were quite badly booked and there wasn't a lot of interest for me. And then in like the 2 or 3 days before it, I started to get pretty excited and I was looking forward to it. And I think the show did a fantastic, fantastic job of being a historical moment-filled, you know, pinnacle of 30 years of WrestleMania. It was really strong.
I think the one thing that I'm thinking about it now with the matches, the one thing that we were surprised at was the Shield squash match, because that's pretty much what it was. You know, you're watching all the matches go on, and then all of a sudden it felt like the Shield were just squashed in between, and the match was over in seconds, and felt pointless. That was another match that we were sort of a bit wavery on.
Mm-hmm. I disagree with you a little bit on the John Cena Bray Wyatt match. I thought that was an exciting match, and I know people are upset that Cena won, but it was interesting to see him, you know, see John Cena get twisted a little bit down the dark side, right? And that was even more important than who won or who lost the match, in my opinion. But I thought it was a strong show too. I always liked battle royals. I just feel that in a 4-hour show, though, they could have given some of those guys more of a spotlight match. I think the Divas, and I told you this when I was on your show, I love the Divas. I was a head writer for Diva Dirt for 2 years. I respect them. It was terrible because it meant nothing. And why not give AJ a spotlight championship defense against some worthy challengers? I just don't understand that. But I did want to ask, we have to talk about The Undertaker and his streak being broken. I almost passed out. I was so shocked.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the streak?
Just before we go on to that, the Divas match not only was it terrible, but it was put in the worst spot that has ever existed at any WrestleMania after the streak and before the main event. I mean, what a death spot.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's a good point.
But yeah, so the streak, absolutely, unbelievably shocked.
I honest to God, I almost blacked out. And, but I was there, and I have been to the last 5 WrestleManias.
Oh, you were there live as well, weren't you, Dave?
Oh, yeah, I was.
What was it like in the crowd?
I'm telling you this, when Daniel Bryan won the championship, I'm surprised that the roof didn't blow off. But that was not the case with The Undertaker. People can tell you what they want to tell you. The match itself got a little buzz in the crowd. And I think most people now, before that match, were thinking, well, he's going to win. And they didn't love the build to the match. And it was kind of flat. I thought the match was really flat until he pinned him, until Brock Lesnar won. I didn't love it. What did you guys think watching it on TV?
Completely agreed. I thought the match was a very, very below average match. I thought Undertaker looked hurt. He didn't,
yes.
And I know he was hurt during the match, but I thought he looked old. He looked like if that was the best that he had left, then that was the right time to end the streak. Although I didn't think the streak should end personally, but the match I thought was not an entertaining match. I found it very slow and very inspiring.
Yeah, definitely agreed on all those points. And like Sterling as well, I didn't want the streak to end. I know that when we interviewed you, you talked about that you actually didn't like the streak very much.
Right.
You know, I sort of thought maybe if he just wins one and walks away, you know, wins this one, walks away with the 22-0, you know, streak, that could be it. He could retire after that and everything's great. But he's ended up losing to nobody, really, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, you know, like Sterling was saying, he barely wrestles as often as any of the other wrestlers. I think the point you were making before, Sterling, was if anyone was going to do it, it's because someone's got to draw in that a lot of that heat. But I still don't get it. I still not quite got my head around that.
What I was thinking is that, okay, Brock Lesnar is probably the only guy on the roster that can handle the backlash of, because it needs to be a big heel, and WWE don't have any heels, so they needed someone who could take it, because you can't have Daniel Bryan or Roman Reigns, if you're pushing him as a face, even though that would have been a couple of years down the line, beat the streak, because the fans are not going to respond well to it.
Right.
What did you think, Dave? Did you think Brock Lesnar was the right man? Did you think this was the right time? Did you think it was the right decision?
No, no on all those. And I think I would have gone in two directions. I would have had, when he beat Triple H in that Hell in a Cell in Miami in 28, and the three of them walked out together, that should have been it.
Yeah.
The end of an era match.
And what a beautiful moment for the three of them. If that wasn't going to be it, CM Punk should have beaten them last year. Because CM Punk could have taken that, I think, for the next 6 or 7 years and been a headliner for this company. And with Paul Heyman, who's just great. And, you know, the problem with Brock Lesnar, as you guys mentioned, he doesn't wrestle all the time. This isn't going to do anything really for him. I mean, he's already, you know, a big star, a beast, whatever you want to call him. And how about the fact that after he was pinned, The Undertaker just kind of stood up and walked out?
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't even any kind of, like the celebration or standing ovation from the crowd. I mean, you know, people were so shocked. And I read also that Vince wasn't real thrilled with the reaction, but how can you blame him? I mean, once it happened, they didn't tell us how to feel about it.
I don't feel like anyone knew how to react.
That's exactly right.
It took the commentary team to stand up and literally tell everyone by clapping themselves and giving a standing ovation. And even at that point, no one stood up. It just took so long for the crowd to recover.
Yes.
Could it have ended? I don't know how it went, and I think it was the wrong decision, but I don't know how they could have done it differently.
I mean, couldn't someone, like, for example, couldn't The Undertaker have grabbed the microphone and said, guys, that's it, like, or Triple H, you know, not with Triple H because he's in the heel role now, but someone could have come down and be like, dude, you had the greatest career, and he's like, you know, I'm done, or something. I mean, it was very, I'm telling you, being there live, it was really bizarre. They captured on film a lot of people with their mouths hanging open, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm the only one clapping. If you go back and look at that, they show me, and I'm actually thrilled. But
go back and check that now.
Yeah. But then I went to the restroom and missed the whole Divas match because it was so damn long with the lines. But the people in the concourse, as we were walking around, were not happy about it. You know, there's one thing about shocking, and it's, oh, my God, this was so cool. People were really angry.
I can imagine. I think I just don't think they should have ended the streak. I think he should have retired. But on another point, I don't think The Undertaker had a moment after that match, because I think he's going to be back. I don't think that was his final WrestleMania match. I think it should be, but I think he'll have another match, and it'll be a retirement match.
Is that with Sting next year?
Yeah, I reckon so. If they manage to book it together, but who knows? Who knows what will happen, you know, that far off. But I do think that The Undertaker will have another match. Otherwise, I think they would have done something bigger. I think they'll have the streak ended, and he'll have a final match. That's it's not based on anything specific. It's just my sort of gut feeling about it.
I think the other two points to make as well, one was the, I think you've mentioned before, didn't you, Sterling, about Brock actually being a legitimate hard man.
Being the
reason why that Taker might have been all right with losing to him, because he actually is, you know, quite hard.
I was just going to say that because The Undertaker apparently talked about dropping the streak to Lesnar some years back, which seems bizarre because I didn't think that they really liked each other very much. But I think because the only way I can rationalize it in my head is that because Brock Lesnar is, you know, a UFC world champion and a legitimate tough guy, The Undertaker can kind of feel okay with the fact he lost the streak to him. I don't know. Maybe there's nothing to that. Maybe there is. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think my other point was as well, obviously the last match with Brian, and that maybe that took the sting out of Taker losing his streak. I don't know what it was actually like there by that point, whether everyone had forgotten about Taker by the time they got to the end of the Brian match.
Yes, that's a very good point, Dead Eyes. In fact, they weren't going to end the show with the Taker losing, right?
No. Yeah, and they knew they could get away with it because they knew they were sending everyone home happy.
Yep, and they did. And you know, a great star turn for Cesaro too. A great ending to that battle royal.
Fantastic! That is a WrestleMania moment that will be shown again and again for years to come. And I marked out huge for that. I loved that moment.
Yeah, it's been fun talking to you guys about WrestleMania 30. And the other people I've come across, my friends here in Washington, D.C. area, they liked the show. It seemed like everyone had a pretty positive feel about it. And that maybe is a bit different than what we've seen from WrestleMania the past couple years, or maybe some mixed reviews. So maybe it helped that John Cena wasn't so prominently featured.
Yeah, I think so. I didn't enjoy the John Cena match. I think he was on the right place on the card. I think he should have put Bray Wyatt over, especially as he was in a mid-card match. But, you know, the Daniel Bryan story arc at WrestleMania was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal.
I was worried that they would not give the people the moment they want. And I know that a lot of people there, you mentioned, Dennis, you're not a big Daniel Bryan guy. I'm not either. But there were a lot of people there that were. And, you know, these are people that fly from overseas, you know, what's it, 30-plus countries or something represented. These are every 50 states in the United States had somebody who had bought a ticket. You can't screw your fan base over and over and over again without them at some point getting upset about it.
Do you know, well, we talked about this time and time again on air and off air, and basically we were sort of saying, because like I said, I'm not a big Bryan fan, but through WrestleMania 30, he comes across as, and I think I mentioned at the time, which I think shows the storytelling of the WWE, and they've still got it, is that it got to that final event with the two other guys, and it was like, you know, this strangly, you know, this little guy versus two giant pit bulls. And he had no way of winning. He was like completely the underdog, and you couldn't help but get behind him throughout. And you know, despite the fact that I'm not, you know, big into him, I was really, really happy that he won.
I think gives
credit to the WWE.
Mm-hmm.
I think something that they did really, really well on the show was they created enough doubt that it kept it, because let's face it, it was a foregone conclusion in theory that Daniel Bryan was winning the title. You know, it would have been insane not to be, but I had, the way they booked the show, I had enough doubt that they might not put him over and might not give him the title, that it kept, even when I was watching it, I was like, really, like, I just don't know what's going to happen. And you know, they did the right thing, I think. But it was good the way there was enough doubt built in the show that you were never 100% sure.
Well, and let's give Triple H and Stephanie a little credit. I thought they played their roles very, very well. You know, all the criticism people throw at those two, and you know, they're doing something right. I thought they were excellent. I thought on WrestleMania 30.
Yeah, Triple H was he had a fantastic match with Bryan and put him over very, very well. And actually, Triple H surprised me with his in-ring work in that match. He was a good wrestler.
Yeah, and I thought she was a great character. Guys, you know, one thing was certainly a black cloud about WrestleMania 30 was then, of course, the passing of the Ultimate Warrior just a mere few days after he was on stage at WrestleMania 30. How sad. And as you guys go back and look at these podcasts, he's going to be, you know, involved in a lot of big matches that you watch. Any personal memories of the Ultimate Warrior you'd like to share?
There's one for me where I can't remember which event it was now, but we talked about it recently, where he just runs into the ring and clears everyone out. Referees diving everywhere and wrestlers jumping everywhere, and it's just like, I thought that summed him up because he's so unpredictable. He didn't know what he was going to do, and they were in sheer panic. It wasn't acted out. You could tell they were actually like, get out of the ring before we get hurt. And I think that just sums him up to me. He's just mental.
The Ultimate Warrior was like my favourite wrestler as a kid. Our last podcast, actually, our WrestleMania 30 podcast, was kind of a double header. We did the show was dedicated to the Ultimate Warrior, and the first section of the show was all about the Ultimate Warrior. And one of my favourite things that came out of that, I was kind of reading through some of the tweets that had gone out about the Warrior. And my personal favourite from it was on Twitter from Jesus_M_Christ. And it read, "Some crazy mofo in face paint just crashed through the pearly gates and power slammed St. Peter." That was just amazing. The Warrior was an amazing character. He was a genuine icon, a real face. The guy was maybe not the easiest guy to work with, and maybe, you know, let's face it, the guy said some pretty bad and horrific things, you know, in his time out of character. But what he was a legitimate legend during the biggest period of wrestling history, really. It was seen by more people than any other because it was on, you know, mainstream TV. And you know, he was just something totally different and totally unique. Having watched the Hall of Fame ceremony, it's so sad because his wife and daughters obviously adore him, and he seems, you know, it's a real shame. And his Raw promo the night before he died is just so eerie to go back and listen to, talking about every man breathes his final breath and that kind of thing. It's just so eerie.
Yeah. And I always remember when he pinned Hogan at WrestleMania 6. Again, I almost blacked out there, too, because you never thought you'd see Hogan pinned clean. You just never thought. And that was a big moment at the time. I did not like the year after that, where that was when Macho Man had the career match, right? And Elizabeth comes out of the crowd. And I did not like the fact that Savage hits him with, like, 14 flying elbows.
Yeah.
And Warrior still kicked out. That's the one moment I would change in his career, because I love Savage, and that finisher. We could do a whole podcast on finishing moves.
But to me,
the DDT, the Stone Cold Stunner, I mean, there's been great. I loved Hogan's leg drop, but the flying elbow when I was a kid was like, oh my God, it was like the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. And you know, to hit Warrior with like 10 of them, however many, was it like, it was literally like 5 or 6, right?
Yeah, it was. And I remember watching that as a child. I can't remember how old I would have been. Not very old. I remember being like, oh, amazing. Like, I was really into it because I was so into The Warrior. So as a child. But yeah, no, I watch that now and I hate it because, agreed, Macho Man's elbow is like, that is the finisher you don't get up from. That, like you said, in the DDT. And yeah, it was, I just hate matches that with repeated finisher kickouts. It doesn't mean anything if your finisher gets kicked out of. You can get away with it once, but to do it that many times. But yeah, the Warrior beating Hogan, that is one of my favorite WrestleMania matches of all time.
It still holds up. Guys, great having you on OWW Radio today. Please tell everybody where they can find you on social media. I did not know you had a YouTube show.
Yeah, we've been slowly building that. I'm stuck at the moment on Rumble 88 trying to get that bad boy together.
We're working our way through the shows. Well, Dead Eyes is making the videos. They're slideshows set to our podcast, and you know, they're just another dimension to the podcast, really. We're much further on through the audio podcast than we are through the YouTube ones.
What's your Facebook page?
So on Facebook, we're Sterling Eyes Wrestling Podcast Extravaganza. You can find all of our shows on iTunes just by typing in Sterling Eyes Wrestling Podcast Extravaganza again. We're also on Twitter. Our handle is @SterlingEyes1. That's a really good place to get hold of us. We're quite active on Twitter. So if you want to chat, that's a good place to go to. YouTube, again, just type in the podcast name and we'll pop up. And all of our shows are hosted on DJ Pod, which is www.djpod.com /Sterling Eyes. And you can go there. I don't think you can subscribe on DJ Pod, but all of the shows are there. But if you want to subscribe, head over to iTunes and check them out. And we'd love to have some new subscribers, and we'd love to hear from anyone who enjoys the show with feedback, comments, thoughts, or, you know, just
abuse.
Just something to have a laugh about. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, abuse. We do love a bit of abuse as well. Have I missed anything, Dead Eyes, or is that all of our
social
media?
I think you've just about covered everything, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, guys, for being guests here on OWW Radio. Continued success to the Sterling Eyes Wrestling Podcast Extravaganza. Definitely looking forward to checking out some of your upcoming shows, and let's do this again soon.
Dave, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having us on the show. Really enjoyed chatting to you again.
You got it. Have a good day.
Thanks, bye.
You too. Take care.
And don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. Email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Till next time, I am David. Thanks again to Sterling Mantooth and Dead Eyes, the hosts of the Sterling Eyes Wrestling Podcast Extravaganza. We hope you enjoy the interview, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio. All right, well that's okay.